It's not our usual day, but it is time to ask the doctors. As the CDC names Delta a quote-unquote variant of concern, and some health experts say it could become the dominant strain by this fall. And then the Commonwealth rolls out a new vaccination lottery. Let's answer your vaccine and virus questions. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us this week for Ask the Doctors, Dr. Sabrina Asumu, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Boston University's School of Medicine, an infectious disease specialist at Boston Medical Center, and Dr. Shira Durone, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Asumu, Dr. Durone, welcome back.
Thank you for having me on.
Great to have you both. Do I have you there too, Dr. Durone?
Yes, thank you so much.
Terrific. Okay, so as calls come in, I want to start with a couple of questions, and I think we should start with the Delta variant. So Dr. Asumu, what does it mean? What does labeling it a variant of concern mean? That's how it's being called here in the United States. And how does this variant differ from the original COVID-19 strain?
Yeah, this is a very good question. So usually when we think of variants, there are three things that we worry about. Number one, is the variant more contagious? So meaning if it is in a community, does it mean that more people are going to get infected? Number two is, does a variant cause more disease and more people to get sick? And then the third thing we worry about the most is the variant going to evade immunity? So are the vaccines that we have not going to work? So with the new Delta variant that was initially identified in India, what we do know is that it is more transmissible. So meaning more people are more likely to get it and get infected by it. So that's one of the things that we usually worry about. And the CDC actually changes its labeling depending on how worrisome a certain variant is. So the Delta variant is actually one of the ones that we really worry about. At the moment, the good news is that if you get two shots of the mRNA vaccine, you are protected and you're doing fine. So the vaccines that we currently have in the country are going to work. So this is even more reason to get vaccinated. But we don't want to get to a point where our vaccines don't work. And so that is why it is even more important to get vaccinated at this point.
So Dr. Durone, picking up on something Dr. Asumu said there, she noted that the Delta variant originated in India. And I want to pull this out because the World Health Organization is now calling COVID-19 variants by letters of the Greek alphabet. That is a change. Originally, they were being referred to from where they were first seen. And this is about avoiding the stigmatization of nations, of places where variants come from. Talk a little bit about why that's so important, especially for public health officials and scientists, doctors in this field.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important both in terms of stigmatization and also in terms of the assumptions that you might make. I mean, I think, you know, most people have heard the story about how we called the 1918 flu the Spanish flu. And as it turns out, it probably didn't originate in Spain. And so it's simply scientifically incorrect sometimes to use geographic designations. But in addition, it certainly is no one's fault. And you wouldn't want to, you know, assign that blame or have any prejudices arise from that type of designation.
All right. We actually have calls coming in. Are the two of you ready? Shall we go to the phones?
Sure.
Let's do it. All right. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK is the number. We've got Nancy on the line in Cambridge. Nancy, you are on with Drs. Asumu and Durone. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, great. So we are having a small family gathering this weekend, not at my house in Cambridge, but out in Western Mass. One of the two people who lives in that house has not been vaccinated. The other person who lives in that house has been vaccinated, and the other four people who are going have been vaccinated. So one out of the six is not vaccinated. The party was going to be outdoors in the afternoon. Do any of us have to wear masks? You know, the person, you know, what about the person who hasn't been vaccinated? What if we stay more than 6 feet away from her? Again, it's going to be outdoors. What if we have to go inside to use the bathroom? Just wondering about that.
Good. Okay, Nancy, thanks. Dr. Asumu, would you help Nancy, please?
So this is a great question as we're all trying to navigate the new lives that we're living now. So number one, I really like the idea that most of the festivities and activities are going to be outside. So outside is very safe. And if you're outside, vaccinated or not vaccinated, we know that it is safe and you do not need to be wearing a mask. The second point I would like to make is maybe trying to understand, you know, why that person isn't vaccinated and maybe trying to encourage them to get vaccinated. In terms of what to do outside, you know, if what we usually what we usually think about is the risk of to getting severe disease to the person is not vaccinated. So let's take the example of, like, let's say a grandparent who goes to visit a household where they're visiting their grandchildren and the grandchildren are low risk for getting severe infection. So in that particular case, even though it is indoors and if everyone is vaccinated, it is safe for the grandparents to be in the house without a mask with the grandchildren because the children are less likely to get severe COVID-19 if they were to be infected. So I guess to answer your question, it would all depend on the risk of that person getting infected if they have severe COVID. So if they have comorbidities or if they're older, then in that particular case, we may recommend for people to be masked to protect that person. But in general, if that person were low risk or if they're a child, if everyone is vaccinated, then even if it is indoors, it would be relatively safe.
So I'm going to ask, thank you, Dr. Asumu. And Dr. Daron, I'm going to ask a follow-up question to you from there. I'm mindful that Nancy's question underscores it's still confusing to know what's safe and what's not. Dr. Asumu just gave us a very good outline there. I know over the last few weeks, I've heard you a number of places, Dr. Daron, trying to help provide that clarity as well by talking about, okay, here's what I feel safe doing and why. How do we get to a point where we have public clarity on what is safe and what's not? Is that a matter of time, or is there something different we need to be doing to make sure we all really understand and are confident, I can do this, I shouldn't do that?
It's so hard because everyone's definition of safe is different, and the degree of risk that everyone is willing to take is different. And what's important, what everyone's priorities are different. You might say, I really, really miss these family members, and I'm going to visit them even though they're not vaccinated. And that is your own decision. And I think at this point in time, no one can blame you for that. Vaccines are extremely effective. So if you're vaccinated and you're not severely immunocompromised, you can feel quite confident that you will not end up with a serious case of COVID-19 that results in hospitalization or death, even if you spend time with unvaccinated people.
And are you a risk to those unvaccinated people?
No, the chance of being an asymptomatic carrier and transmitting it to someone else is exceedingly minuscule.
Thank you. Those are really helpful clarifications. I'm going to go back to the phones here. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK for your Ask the Doctor's question. We've got Donna on the line in Framingham. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm wondering what the Delta variant and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine numbers look like. You've been really clear about the other vaccines, but I have heard nothing about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and the Delta variant. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. And we will turn to you on that, Dr. Asumu. As we were doing our reading to prepare for today, we also didn't find articles that talked about a one-dose vaccine like the J&J vaccine and the Delta variant. So can you address that for us?
Yeah, there's also another good question. So most of the data that we have right now about vaccines and the Delta variant is the information that we have from the UK. And as you probably know, they've had recently an increase in their cases, and they've been able to provide us additional information about some of the vaccines that we currently have. And to my knowledge, I also haven't come across data as good as what we have for either AstraZeneca or the mRNA vaccine in terms of efficacy for the Delta variant. So it is true that the information is limited at the current time for the Delta variant.
So just to make sure that I understand, people who have had the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, what should their approach be given, as I understand it, the Delta variant is here in the United States. It's still a small proportion, Dr. Durone, but growing at a rapid pace. What should be the mindset of those who have had the J&J vaccine, given what we do and don't know about the Delta variant?
Yeah, tough one. It is an area of scientific need. We need more information. It is certainly not going to provide zero protection. I'm sure of that. It is, though, a one dose vaccine, and it is possible that when it comes to this very much more highly transmissible agent, two doses would be a lot better than one. So it is possible that those who have had the one dose J&J vaccine are at higher risk than others. What that means for each individual, again, is really a personal choice. Cases are still plummeting here in Massachusetts. And with every passing day, the safety for everyone, whether vaccinated or unvaccinated, is increasing. Should those numbers turn around and start to go up again, then that's a different story in terms of risk. And then people may need to take additional precautions.
So we've got a call from Rod in Halifax, Massachusetts, with a good follow-on question here. Rod, go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, so my question is, if someone is anxious about having had the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and they would like to go get a booster with an mRNA vaccine, since they're so plentiful in the Bay State, would there be any negative for them to just go ahead and get a booster, heterologous booster, from an mRNA vaccine?
And is it possible and allowable to do that? I'll add to Rod's question, Dr. Osumu.
Yeah, I just saw this question come up on Twitter, and I was like, oh my goodness, we're treading in really unknown territory. So number one, let me tell you about the J&J vaccine and why this vaccine is so good. So my mother got the J&J vaccine, so I feel very comfortable with that particular vaccine. And when she asked me the question, I said, get the vaccine that's available to you. So the nice thing about the J&J vaccine is that it doesn't, not only does it provide an antibody response to protect you, it also gives you the memory T cells that are hopefully going to provide durable immunity. So in one shot, you get like what you would actually get with an mRNA vaccine. The other good news that's occurring in the U.S. is that as we speak, there are ongoing studies going on to determine whether or not we're going to need a booster shot for J&J vaccine. So I think that information will actually be coming to us relatively soon to see if you boost from one J&J with another J&J shot, do we improve protection and is that necessary? So I'll tell people to hold on and wait for the clinical trials, because it is very important that before we make our recommendations, the reason why we felt very safe to tell people, please get vaccinated, these vaccines are safe and effective, is because we had very robust clinical trial studies helping us make those decisions. So at this time, what I would recommend is your J&J vaccine is great. And given the rates that we have, especially in Massachusetts, I don't have the clinical trial data to provide this information, but I think that the information that you're going to be very well protected. And I would say hold tight, don't do any experimentation, and wait until we get the study so that we can make better recommendations to let people know what to do if they have J&J vaccine. So at this point, I wouldn't recommend that we go outside of the trials by showing up and getting on vaccines. I would say hold on tight. Let's wait for the clinical trial data so that we can make better decisions as to what to recommend on our patients.
Thank you for that. I'm going to grab another call here, 800-423-8255. We've got Leslie on the line in Natick. Leslie, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, my question is, I'm fully vaccinated, although I'm older and have some underlying health issues. I'm going to a funeral, which is outdoors, but it's followed with a luncheon in a restaurant that doesn't have outside seating, with about 20 people, some children, mostly vaccinated. So my concern is, I don't know about the other people or the workers in the restaurant and people coming from out of state. safe is that? And since you're
wondering
you're
eating, how safe
you can't keep your mask on.
So you're wondering how safe you will be in that environment, right, Leslie?
Right. Yes.
So, Dr. Durone, I'll turn back to you for this one.
Yeah, tough one again. So, you know, the good news here is that unlike some other vaccines, like flu vaccine, older age doesn't seem to pose a detriment to the efficacy of vaccination. Older and younger people respond quite well to these vaccines. You know, it's really the severely immunocompromised that see the potentially lower efficacy of the vaccines. So your vaccine is quite protective. Now, you're going into potentially an indoor setting with people who probably are a mix of vaccinated and unvaccinated, and that's where personal choice comes in. Personally, I do go into indoor settings with a mix of people and of unknown vaccine status, and I trust my vaccine to protect me. Is it 100%? It is not. Have there been cases and even small outbreaks in vaccinated people? There have. So that is really going to be your own risk tolerance that's going to dictate what you do. If you wear a mask, at least when you're not eating, you know, we've said all along a mask on sort of both people, right? The infected person and the exposed person is best. So two masks on two people, but one mask that's well-fitting, that covers your nose and mouth, that has multiple layers, is protective for you. And you could choose to add that layer of protection.
Okay, Dr. Susumu Durone, in our remaining time, there's a question that's been brewing that I want to ask the two of you. And it's about the origins of the virus, because now it seems that the thinking is beginning to shift from repeating as a certainty in some circles that it was most likely originated naturally towards questions, including from people like Dr. Fauci, President Biden, about potentially a manufactured origin. I'm going to, for both fun and focus, I'm going to play a little sound from Jon Stewart here on CBS's The Late Show last night.
I think we owe a great debt of gratitude to science. Science has, in many ways, helped ease the suffering of this pandemic, which was more than likely caused by science.
Okay, so he goes on to talk about the virology lab, and he talks about a virus like this was first spotted in a city with a respiratory virology lab, comparing it to a, quote, chocolatey goodness, end quote, outbreak happening in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Now, he's joking, but jokes aside, and understanding that there's politics to this, but there's science to this. How important is it for us to know where the virus came from scientifically? Why, and what do we know? What part of that can you help us with, Dr. Susumu?
Yeah, no, these are all important questions. I mean, if we want to be so prepared for future pandemics, and there are going to be additional ones, we want to understand where this virus came from so that we can put together infrastructure and protocols to make sure that we're prepared and that we're able to overcome all those challenges. So that is why it is so important and critical that we understand where it is coming from. I think that it is an important question to answer. And I know that there's been kind of an evolving evolution in thinking as to the origin of the virus. But I also want to underscore that in many circles, there's still a belief that this came from natural causes and circumstances. And I think that we need to do additional studies to really answer that question. But I think that if you talk to a lot of virologists, they can tell you that because of some of the initial studies that were done and how to actually come to where we are now and how the virus evolved and how it was discovered, how it evolved and how it worked. At the time, you know, the data seemed to be really suggesting that it came from natural causes. So I would say we need to do additional studies, but also remember those important studies that were done pretty early on.
So, Dr. Durone, in our remaining time, a little bit different kind of origin question. A new study out from the National Institutes for Health found that cases of the coronavirus were circulating, or suggests that cases of the coronavirus were circulating here in Massachusetts as early as potentially December of 2019. What do we know about the study? what impact does its finding have on our understanding of how the pandemic spread here?
Yeah, you know, this is not the first time this has come up. And these studies have been antibody-based studies, which I find it interesting that we're, you know, still looking at those, because as we know, you know, antibody tests aren't always so reliable, right? Antibodies are blood those are blood tests that determine whether there's been a history of exposure. What I'd really love to see as more definitive evidence that the virus has been around longer than we thought is old swabs, say for flu, that show PCR evidence of the virus having been here before. Antibody tests just don't quite convince me.
All right. That was a fascinating conversation. There will be more questions. We will do this again. Dr. Shira Jerome, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center, and Dr. Sabrina Asumu, assistant professor of medicine at Boston University School of Medicine and infectious disease specialist at Boston Medical Center. Thanks so much to both of you for doing Ask the Doctors today.
Thank you.
Thank you.